Welcome, everyone. I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Want to start off by wishing you all a happy Valentine's Day. Yes, it is February 14th, and more to the point, it is Oregon's birthday today.
It is so exciting.
So therefore, let's do good work today, colleagues, in celebration of our beloved state. Let me start off with the good news. Some of you know, and that is that we're not meeting on Friday. So whatever happens today, we won't be meeting tomorrow.
Thank you, Mr. Friday. Chair, for something positive today.
Yes, that's great. And we, you know, today is, of course, the day for us to complete the first phase of our work. By the end of today, all our bills need to leave this committee. Those that we love so much, we want to stay here for eternity. We can choose to do that, but my goal is to move all of these bills out. And we're going to go in the following order. We're going to start with the idling bill, Senate Bill 1509. Then we're going to do 1550, and that is our food fish bill. And then 1533, equine therapy. Then 1507, clean energy jobs. And then 1541, the Cleaner Air Oregon bill. We will not be working Senate Bill 1508. So with that, I'm going to open our work session on Senate Bill 1507. Beth, can you remind us?
No.
I mean 1509.
Very screwed.
Sorry.
We're going backwards.
I need to look at the right sheet.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1509 is the bill that would authorize local governments to adopt idling ordinances. There is a dash 3 amendment, which now requires that those ordinances not be less stringent than the idling restrictions that are required in state law. There's no subsequent referral. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Vice Chair Olson.
Chair DeMuro, I move to adopt the dash 3 amendments to dated 2/13/18.
Okay, Vice Chair Olson has moved to adopt the dash 3 amendments dated February 13th, 2018. Discussion. Okay. Is there any objection to our adopting these amendments, whose goal is to clarify what we meant by that language about in the dash ones? Okay, seeing none, so ordered, the bill is amended. Vice Chair?
Chair DeMuro, I move Senate Bill 1509 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 1509 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion of the motion? Seeing none, is there any objection to this motion? Seeing none? So ordered. The bill will go to the floor. I'll carry it. With that, I will close our work session on Senate Bill 1509 and open our work session on Senate Bill 1550. And Beth, can you remind us of this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1550 is the bill that would authorize the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to adopt record-keeping requirements for people who engage in food fish for commercial purposes. There's a dash 5 amendment. That amendment makes some revisions to the bill, including prohibiting the commission from applying the requirements to tribal members who are exercising treaty reserved rights of an Indian tribe, and also addresses the potential for someone to keep these records electronically. There is a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, no subsequent referral.
Vice Chair.
Chair DeMuro, I move to adopt the dash 5 amendments dated 2/14/18.
Vice Chair Olson has moved to adopt the dash 5 amendments dated February 14th, 2018. Any discussion? Is there any objection to these amendments? Seeing none, so ordered. Vice Chair.
Chair Denver, I move Senate Bill 1550 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 1550 to, as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of the base bill? Or the amended bill, in fact? Senator Olson? I'm sorry, Senator Roblin?
Nope, I'm good. I appreciate all the work that has been, well, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate all the work, and I'm, some of the questions that came up in the discussion were very helpful. When I was really initially did this bill, it was really about Dungeness crab and domoic acid, also razor clams, and that was really the extent. But we widened it a little bit in the definitions because we wanted to have the ability, if there was another outbreak of a different kinds of things, and Senator Bence has some good questions about tilapia and stuff that I hadn't really thought about, but truly were covered in this bill. And so the tribes contacted us because there are tribal fishing rights, and I have no intention of getting in their way. So thanks to Beth for working really hard to get amendments that it met all the needed requirements to make this work. And I really appreciate the work that everybody's done to get it to the point that it is right now.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments? Is there any objection to our adopting this motion? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Roblin, you'll carry this.
I would be honored.
Great.
Thank you.
I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1550 and open our work session on Senate Bill 1533. And Beth, can you tell us about this and about the amendment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1533 has a -3 amendment that you reviewed when you heard the bill on Friday. The amendment replaces the introduced measure and allows equine and equine-affiliated therapeutic and counseling activities in an exclusive farm use zone. The -3 has a minimal fiscal, no revenue impact, and there's no subsequent referral on the bill.
Great. Vice Chair?
Chair Dernbrough, I move to adopt the -3 amendment stated 2818.
Vice Chair Olson has moved to adopt the -3 amendment stated February 8th, 2018. Any discussion of the amendments? Yes, Senator Bretschinger.
Yeah, could somebody refresh my memory, because I don't seem to have the -3s in here, what the big changes were? Maybe Ben.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bretschinger, the language was revised. It amends the same sections of law to add a provision that allows these facilities in exclusive farm use zones. The amendment itself, the language is more streamlined than what was in the introduced measure. And I think the parties who were discussing it agreed that it covers the types of activities that they're interested in. So activities where the horse is not directly involved, but there's been therapy involving the horse.
Got it. You did a fantastic job refreshing my memory.
Okay. Any other questions or discussion? Is there any objection to our adopting these amendments? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Dembrough, I move Senate Bill 1533 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 1533 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, so ordered. The bill will go to the floor. We'll have Senator Knope carry it. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1533 and open our work session on Senate Bill 1507. Beth, you don't need to summarize this bill. So Senate Bill 1507 is the Clean Energy Jobs Bill. And the motion before you is a motion to refer the bill to rules, and I'll explain the rationale and the plans. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Denver, I move Senate Bill 1507 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Roblin has moved Senate Bill 1507 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. And let me start off by saying we had originally intended to have an amendment for you today that would have dealt with the issue that arose the other day about, that Senator Roblin brought about the, we wanted to clarify, we're talking about Oregon federally recognized tribes when we are referring to tribes and tribal nations and sovereign nations. And you would have thought it would have just meant doing some word processing and making a an easy change. But in the world of LC, things are more complicated, and it would have taken them too long. So we're not going to have those amendments. I think, you know, it's the intent, it's my intent, I think it's everyone's intent, that that is who this applies to. There will be subsequent amendments to this bill, and we'll make that change at that time. We had originally thought that this bill would go from here to Ways and Means, but there are going to be some amendments that that have to be made to the bill. There, you know, we heard things during public testimony last week, and I would say we heard things, concerns, and issues raised on Monday when we had our work session on the Dash 4 amendments that are inspiring us to make some further changes. So those changes will be made in the Rules Committee. The Senate President would prefer that policy changes be done in the policy world as opposed to Ways and Means. That's somewhat surprising since he's the co-chair of Ways and Means now. You know, you would think he would want to do everything down there. Mm-hmm. But instead, he prefers to focus on the fiscal side of things. So having the time spent in rules will also help us to get a more precise revenue forecast on this, which I know is a concern of Senator Bence's, and it just makes a lot of sense. So the bill will be, my desire would be to send this bill to rules where it will be worked on next week, and hence the motion. So, you know, but this is a bill that many of us on this committee have done a lot of work on and provided a lot of input on over the last year. So I'd like to give everyone on the committee the opportunity to make a statement, if you'd like, about this bill, about this approach to dealing with the issue of climate change, and, you know, just put your thoughts on the record. And I'll kind of keep talking for a while so that you can all formulate your thoughts.
Mr. Chair,
yes, Vice Chair.
The other day I asked you a question about why the term anthropogenic was removed on page 3, and you never really got to be able to answer that question. So I wonder if you could answer it.
Sure. I thought I answered it, actually, that, you know, what I said was the word anthropogenic does not exist in our underlying goals that were set 10 years ago about how our goals for where we want our greenhouse gas emissions to be by the year 2050. And so in that section of the bill, by changing, by adding the word anthropogenic, it would have changed that underlying goal, and so we would have then been dealing not with apples to apples, kind of. The word anthropogenic does exist later on in the bill where, you know, where it's appropriate for it to. But we didn't want to change that underlying statute. So it was an error.
So can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Would that, by eliminating anthropogenic, does that open the door to biogenic gases?
Well, yes. I mean, okay. That is...
Just like to get that on the record, that we're now looking at all.
Well, yeah, and let me say that I think our intent is to allow or direct DEQ to consider to continue monitoring as they have been to see where we are in meeting our goals.
Can I follow up with another question?
Yeah.
By doing that, then in the list of 100, there are many entities that emit biogenic gases and not anthropogenic gases. So does that add them to the emitter list of 100?
They have always been on, you know, they have been, this doesn't change who's on the list and who's off the list.
Oh, I understand that, but those people that are anthropogenic emitters are getting charged, and those that are biogenic emitters wouldn't be. According to the DEQ list of 100.
Boy, I hate to do this, but I'm gonna have to ask Colin to come up. Sorry, Colin.
Yes, put him on the spot.
That's Beth, did you?
Well, nice tie, by the way.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I think the difference is that anthropogenic does appear in the section of the bill that dictates who is covered, but what the program covers. So the initial section of the bill where it's removed makes it consistent with how that statute read before. Adding it makes it clear that that is what the program in the bill covers.
Is that clear enough, or shall I call Colin up, Vice Chair?
Just want to make sure that people that use biomass aren't going to be hooked up in this bill.
Thanks, Colin.
Not expecting that, were you? Happy Valentine's.
Thank you. Chair Dembrough, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Colin McConaughey with the Department of Environmental Quality. Chair Dembrough, Vice Chair Olson, my understanding of the language with the inclusion of anthropogenic in the section that dictates the emissions covered by the Cap and Invest program, that would exclude the CO2 that is considered biogenic from the combustion of biomass.
That's your understanding?
Yes.
And is, if I may follow up, is that the intent of DEQ to make that happen? Rule?
Chair Dembrough, Vice Chair Olson, that is my understanding. That's, I think, the best that I can tell you, because I cannot speak to what the rules would say. That would have to go through my commission for adoption. But I can tell you my experience in this area is that the CO2, how other policies and programs here in Oregon and elsewhere that I'm familiar with, the CO2 from biomass is not considered anthropogenic and is typically not covered by direct regulation like this program. So it would come as a surprise to me, I'll say that if were CO2 from biomass to be covered, given the existing language that I see in the bill.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
There's all kinds of surprises on this one.
Okay, and Vice Chair, thank you for creating that delay so that Senator Benz had time to collect his thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for all your work on this issue. It's it's amazing how, without a champion, these big issues don't move anywhere. And you and Representative Helm have certainly been doing, I think, your very best to try to address this issue. And I appreciate all the other people that have weighed in. And I further appreciate the fact that this bill is not moving directly out of this committee to the floor, but instead is on its way for further work. It would be my hope that the bill does not pass out this session. It would be my hope that there would be an opportunity to build on your work throughout the summer and in anticipation of the 19th session. That would be my hope. And if it turns out that way, then that will give us an opportunity to take that work and measure it against all of the other CO2 efforts that are currently ongoing in this state, and then make sure that before we take that step, we have appropriately incorporated such a large step into the other efforts we're currently making in that regard. And it would also give us a chance to do what I had a bill, I mentioned it earlier, I did not drop it, that reflected what's known as iterative risk management. And it's the concept which I've shared with you, which simply means that you take into account before you do anything having to do with the climate a series of different concerns, many of which I'm sure you've raised in the process already, but I think this would give us a more formal opportunity to see where what you've done fits into the bigger scheme of Oregon's climate efforts. And just so I'm clear on this, the concept is that we are doing a great deal now. When I look at what California did in its cap and trade and how it awkwardly incorporated its cap and invested cap and trade bill with its low carbon fuel operations. I see a stacking and a not necessarily a productive effort. And they comment on this in some of the papers I reviewed in working on the low carbon fuel standard transparency piece that we put in the transportation package. So I am hopeful, given the incredibly important nature of the problem you're trying to address and the cost, of course, of this effort, the 16 cents a gallon, of course, and the impact that would have on truckers and everybody else is something that requires careful thought, particularly when we look at it in light of what we just finished doing a short 7-8 months ago. So, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to further discussion.
I appreciate that, Senator Benz. And let me just say that, you know, I think our vision for the Cap and Invest program, once it's underway, is that, you know, it's creating a framework within which a number of efforts are happening, right? And so to the extent that we are being successful in our low carbon fuel standard, the easier it is for people to comply, for fuel importers to comply with the you know, the purchase of allowances. It becomes easier for them to meet the goals to come under the cap. And, you know, I think it's the same whether we're talking about our energy efficiency programs or, you know, any of the other programs that are out there. We want these programs to work hand in hand, not to be duplicative. Thank you. Yes, Senator Thatcher.
Thatcher.
Did I say Thatcher? Listen to me. Listen to me.
It's
less of the T. Yeah. Last committee I was on, she called me the chair.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
We're all confused. Sorry. Senator Taylor.
That's okay. Thank you. I know. Thank you, Chair Dembrough. I want to thank you for taking on this very difficult issue. And I know that obviously Senator Beyer and previously Senator Edwards and all sorts of other folks over many sessions have worked to address this. And I just want to draw attention to the fact that for every session that we keep working on this, we are, as far as I see it, are putting ourselves and, frankly, the planet at risk. And climate change is the issue of our time. I truly, sincerely believe that. And I think it's important that we remember that in the original bill, no one ever thought that we were going to go ahead and pass it and then start implementing it. It's always had a rollout period. Everybody who's been involved with this bill has always known that we would take a period of time to go through all the details and through rulemaking and et cetera, because it is complicated in a sense, and a lot of details have to be ironed out. And we do this with all sorts of pieces of legislation. We pass something and then we take a few years to implement it. I understand it's going to rules, and I don't serve on the Rules Committee, and I'm new to this committee. I hope that we do pass the bill this session and that we get working on this, because it is important to take some actual concrete steps versus, you know, in the past sessions, even though we have done some great things, we have, but this is something that I really do think needs to be addressed in a comprehensive way, taking into account all the other legislation that we've passed in previous sessions. But you asked us all to make a comment, so those are my comments, Senator Dembrough.
Very much appreciated.
Thank you, Senator Thatcher.
Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I to be quite honest, I am amazed at your tenacity that you and Representative Helm, I admire that. You've worked very hard. It's a very complicated piece of legislation, and you guys have just you've worked really hard at it. Reducing CO2 or pollution in general is a good thing. I come at it at a little different angle. I think what government needs to do is somehow figure out incentives for not just businesses, but for individual people in general, whether it's through new technology or savings or whatever. And I think that's the role government needs to play in reducing, I'm going to say pollution, because it's not just CO2, there's all types of pollution. And so I look at it at a different angle, and I look forward to working on legislation that does create incentives to reduce CO2 and pollution across the state. I mean, Oregon, you know, we've pioneered it with the bottle bill and other bills, and there's no question about it. And if you look at those successes were because of incentives, not hammers. And so I hope as we go forward that we can work together and try to come up with those incentives to reduce CO2 and pollution in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator.
And I'll be glad I don't have to lug this around anymore.
Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to give you accolades and to Representative Helm. The work that I've seen in my years here has not been surpassed by the work you all have done during this past interim. Having the four breakout groups, having everyone having an opportunity to participate at the different, I'm going to call it subject matter issue, was not only unique, but I think it was very advantageous to ensure everyone could be heard in the area they needed and wanted to be heard and be part of it without necessarily weighing down that process. It, in fact, I thought gave us an opportunity to cover a lot of issues in a more exponential way than we've seen in the past. I'm sorry that it has not gotten the full traction. I understand individuals taking the position that this is a short session, but I would say this is one of those bills that's not just all of a sudden popping up for the first time. We've worked it through long sessions. We've worked it through short sessions, meaning more than one, and here we are. And so I'm hoping that we can act on it sooner than later, because when we have young people like Jeremy, I believe Clark, coming before us, to me that's a signal that we need to be doing our job so we can ensure those generations that are coming after us are going to have the privileges that we've had of being able to live in an open environment and not an artificial one.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Senator Rubin.
So, again, I'll pile on with all the rest of them. I think you have been tenacious, and even more so than Beyer and some of the other people before you with respect to getting input and talking to people. I think the work groups were a positive addition. I am personally thankful to you for having, I believe, made the Senate bill the best of the two. That's just my personal opinion, and because I think you listen to rural Oregonians as well as others and put some things in this bill that give them an opportunity to look at it in a different way. I am one of those people who believe that at the end of the day, the best legislation is legislation that we as a body come together on, Republicans and Democrats. I have worked my entire time in this field, including the House, to try to bring us together to have a conversation about things that move Oregon forward, because we are all Oregonians, and we've already heard here that everybody believes we need to deal with this problem of air pollution in lots of different ways. Getting there is awfully difficult, always is. I look forward to, since I am on rules and I've gone to every one of these meetings and I've gone all over the country thinking about this, I look forward to having it there. Senator Beyer is there too, so you have other people who have looked at this for a long time. And I will continue to work to make sure we have a bill that works. I was one of those from the beginning that basically felt it's hard to do this in a short session for a number of reasons, and one of which was I was the co-speaker of the House when we passed the legislation that made annual sessions, and I made a commitment to a lot of other people there that this is really a budget balancing time, and so it's hard for me. I keep working on that in my mind as part of the whole thing. If we can get to the place where I feel that we've gotten that other group of people and people recognize that it's time to go, I have no problem, but I want to make sure that the things that need to happen in this bill to make it as good as we possibly can are going to do there. I really appreciate the fact that last session we passed an ocean acidification bill, pretty much bipartisan-wise. It is addressing some of the same problems that this bill does. We've passed clean fuels and other kinds of bills, and we've watched the ramifications of those, and I would say that from my perspective, they have not been as great as people thought they were going to be. But we need to continue to have those conversations. I look forward to continuing the conversation. I continue to work with you on trying to solve this problem that Oregon has. So thanks for the opportunity to say a few words.
Thanks, Senator.
Vice Chair.
Thank you.
You have a PowerPoint?
I do have, no, I don't have a PowerPoint.
Well, that's me.
I do need another bottle of water.
And I do have a bottle of water.
Okay.
Takeaway.
And I will pile on, because this type of work is tedious, laborious, takes a lot of time, a lot of your time. And Rep. Helms, you guys did a great job of putting it together and working on it. You know that I have concerns about it, and part of my concerns are the cost, the doubling, tripling, and quadrupling of revenues off the same entity. Concerns me greatly for Oregon. It's there. Everybody sees it. Everybody knows it's there. One of my largest concerns is the fact that we have implemented programs, and we haven't let them work, and to see what reductions we have. I've seen this same bill with my chair, Chris Edwards, and last session we had the same bill. And you've done a tremendous job of getting to where you're at. The concerns I have, of course, I posted 23 problems that I see with the bill, and I'm glad it's going to rules for further work, and I'm glad that Senator Roblin will be there, because you've seen the policy side of it. You've seen this, and I don't, those people will not have the same oversight that we've had, and we've been able to see from the people, and that greatly makes me feel much better about it. One of my concerns is the fact the lack of information, specifics on revenue income and revenue outflow. We don't know that. We don't have a fiscal impact statement. We don't have a revenue statement. So it's all speculation. We've talked many times about $16 a ton. Perhaps if this bill passes and gets to 2020, 2021, it'll be $20 a ton, $22 a ton. We don't know where it will be. So it's all in space, which concerns me, because those incremental increases cost more money, and it costs Oregonians more money. And that's always been my bottom line, is what does it cost Oregonians? And I mentioned it in my PowerPoint, we have a transportation tax on our fuels. We have the low carbon fuel standard. When it finally generates, as per the state, it'll be 4 to 19 cents. And if this goes, as everyone says, at $16 a ton, that's another 16 cents a gallon. My concern is, do we want Oregon to look like California? Do we want to pay $3.50, $4 a gallon for gas? Because when you look at the fuel side of it, this bill really is extremely difficult to reduce carbon out of fuel. The way to do that is change the fuel mix. The way this bill wants you to do it is price everyone out of purchasing fuel. And that concerns me, particularly for Eastern Oregon. The Valley folks, we have transit systems and stuff where we can get around. But Eastern Oregon folks, they don't have that ability. They have to travel long distances. So it's a huge drain on their well-being and on their family wealth to have to pay these kind of costs. Because it not only will be a cost on their fuel, but it'll be a cost on their electricity. It'll be a cost on their natural gas. So their entire energy package will cost them more money. And what concerns me is, as you take disposable income away from families, that's less they can do with their family, which indicates that jobs will be lost because the economy is not rolling, because they're not going to the movie theater or the restaurant or wherever. That's one thing that concerns me. Another thing that concerns me is the fact that in the bill, it's not clearly defined how you assess what is a climate impact and what is a weather impact. If it snows in Bend in July, that could be climate. Do you send them money? If it doesn't snow and we don't have enough snowpack on the mountain, is that climate? Do we send them money? So the question is, how do we determine what's a climate impact and what is a weather impact? That's a pretty big thing. I am disappointed that you were not able to put in the fact that it's for Oregon tribes. Obviously, that's a situation you're well aware of. I think that speaks to itself. I'm also concerned the fact that as we look at our top producers, and I mentioned this before, out of the top 50, 32 have already reduced from 2014 levels, and 18 have increased. But the lower numbers, the numbers from 50 down to 229, some have had 50, 60, 70% increases in CO2. And that's going to be an impact, because as you try to to negate the CO2 output from the top, the bottom is adding to it. So that means you have to take more from the top to balance off what the bottom is adding. And as today on the floor, when I mentioned the fact that 840,000 metric tons are going to go into the atmosphere because of the river system, I was clearly told that, you know, they could mitigate some of that problem with the renewables, and that's absolutely true. But you can't mitigate all 840,000. So now you've got another balancing act of your, of whatever your number is that you want to come up with. I believe it's 1.4 million. Then you have to generate more decrease to balance that off so you get to your 1.4. Then also in the bill, and I hate to be long-winded, but we have to take into account increased population. And I don't think the Global Warming Commission really did a good job of taking into account increased population. We as people don't count when we breathe out, but we need homes, we need transportation, we need all of those things that require CO2 output. And if you look at that, we've done a tremendous job in the housing industry reducing energy consumption, and which reduces CO2 production. But with an increased population, we have to take that into account, and you're penalizing certain corporations over others. And I'll give you an example. Just in the electricity, you got PGE, PacifiCorp, and Umatilla Electric. Those are areas that are in the top 50. But the areas around that, for example, next to me, Canby Utility Board, they're not paying. So my electric rate will go up when my neighbors will not. And so it's a tax that is paid by some at a heavier rate than by all. Now, they will pay the fuel tax, but I will pay the higher energy cost for electricity, another concern of mine. And the bill clearly states that money collected in an area must stay in an area. So I don't know how you're going to separate out the cash from PGE PacifiCorp and not give it to an area over here. At least that's my understanding. So I commend you on the work that you did on it. You by far did more than the other folks that had their bills come forward, and you've made a great case. I hope it goes to rules and stays in rules. And we work on it next year so we can really get a really good bite of the apple rather than rush it through and figure out later what it's going to cost. That's my concern. And thank you for the work you did.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Thank you all for your kind comments. It's hard for me, of course, to let this bill go, except that I have a high degree of confidence in my colleagues over in rules, so that tempers it somewhat. And, you know, I want to start off my comments just by a couple of you have mentioned Senator Edwards, and I just want to give him a real shout out because the framework for this bill really was something that he put together, and he was tireless, and it broke his heart that it couldn't get over the finish line. And that's yet another way that Chris and I are, you know, are similar, that in that this is a subject of passion, really, for both of us. You know, his work became so much more acute for me a year ago when we heard from the Climate Research Institute that our targets were inadequate, and when we heard from the Global Warming Commission that we were not on track to meet those targets. And I fully appreciate Senator Bertschinger's comments about wanting to create incentives and to do it with incentives, but I believe that incentives alone are not going to keep us on track. You know, we have to, I think, commit ourselves. We know where we want to be, we know where we are, and we have to create a process that will have the discipline to get us slowly, steadily, inexorably to where we need to be. You know, from all the people that we heard from last year and even earlier, the best way to do that is through a cap and trade kind of system, because it gives businesses as well as individuals the opportunity to be creative and to find the least cost ways to reach those targets and to maintain that discipline. You know, I will say that, you know, my preference, I think it won't be a surprise to any of you, would be to be able to pass this bill out in a bipartisan way. You know, I think that this is an important issue. It's one that affects all of us, our children, our grandchildren. This is not a Democratic issue by any means, a Democratic set of concerns. And, you know, I found myself over the last year having to kind of channel people who were not in the room and thinking about their interests. And I think the bill does reflect that to a very large extent. One of the things that we heard from our partners in the other jurisdictions that have gone down this road and, you know, formed or joined the Western Climate Initiative is, you know, in their experience, their legislatures had a more of a hands-off process, right? They knew that they wanted to create a program, and they directed their agencies to create the program. It was very clear to me that that was not going to work here, that that people were going to want policy that was much more developed. You know, certainly details always have to be left up to the experts, but that the direction needed to be very, very clear. And that's why we've been working on this so extensively for the last year. The bill has, you know, and I will say from some of our partners in the other states, they're, you know, they kind of marvel actually at how far this bill has come and how specific it is in a number of areas. And again, that's a function of the work that, you know, people up here have done, but very largely some of you who are here in this audience or people who are watching us, I know, from all points on the political spectrum or the, you know, just all the stakeholders. You know, we've gotten a lot of pushback on specific proposals, and this bill has grown from that, you know, I believe. You know, a couple of the areas that I think I feel really good about, you know, the way that we've developed the bill is, you know, clarifying the governance so that, you know, the legislature in creating this, when we pass this bill, you know, as Senator Taylor said so clearly, the program doesn't begin overnight. There's still going to be a process of creating the program, doing the rulemaking, et cetera. And I think it's important to all of us that the legislature be very closely involved in that process and that the governance be clear and that to the extent possible we make use of existing routes and processes that we have in place rather than reinventing the system and creating duplications where we don't want them to be, but to actually build off of existing processes. And I think that the bill has really, you know, done a good job of getting us there. You know, two other areas that have been developed that, again, I'm very proud of are the way that we have involved our environmental justice communities, our, you know, what we call in the bill the impacted communities, not only having them as covered by the bill, but having them at the table, often people who are not invited to the table for the discussions and other people are making decisions for them, but they have been actively at the table and expressing firsthand, you know, the difficulties that they face just in their everyday lives and more can foresee that being even more acute as climate change becomes more acute. So it's that I'm really glad that we were able to involve them. The final thing I want to say is, you know, as Senator Roblins mentioned, the bill really does has over time developed a real focus on rural Oregon, both in terms of you know, the different investments that are in the bill, and those investments we hope will address one of the key problems that this state faces, and that is in many areas the moribund nature of the economy in those areas. They need jobs. They need jobs in areas, in natural resource areas, that can also help us to decarbonize make our forests healthier, fight forest fires, keep our working lands working. Those are all areas, I have to confess, they weren't really at the top of my radar when we started this work. But over time, I've come to realize the extent to which not only can this program benefit those rural communities, but those rural communities can help us through the carbon storage and sequestration kinds of projects to not only reduce our emissions, but to really turn the tide on climate change. This is something Oregon can really do. And I think the bill, in its current form, points the way for how we can do that. And I think that's a great thing. Anyway, I could go on and on, but I only envision better things coming to this bill when it's in rules, as it's looking at the further set of amendments. And I look forward to seeing it again. So with that, Shelley, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Berkshire.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You got to make a motion, don't you?
Oh, it was made.
Yeah,
I made it.
Already made it.
That was some time back.
It's been a long time. Ago. This
was it on an amendment or
no,
was it on
there was no
amendment.
The referral?
Okay. Just a referral. Okay.
Just a referral.
That was our discussion.
That was our discussion.
Unless you have something else you need.
Yes, I have something
else. More.
Now, how much time? Do we have to yield our time?
No, I just I want to explain that I'm going to be voting no, the reason is, everybody needs to know the reason is one, I don't think rules is the place to fix this bill. It's not done. It needs some more work. We've acknowledged that. I totally agree with the Senate President. Rules is not the place to work on it. Ways and Means, but even rules is not the place to work on it. And I am a little bit afraid that it will get mixed up with end of session strategies, commonly known in rural Oregon as horse trading. And so I will be voting no.
Thanks, Senator. Okay, Shelley.
No.
That was clear.
Senator Bounce.
No.
Senator Brzozinski.
Aye.
Senator Roblin.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson.
No.
Chair Dumbrow.
Aye. The motion carries. It will head over to the Rules Committee. With that, I'll close our work session on Senate Bill 1507. And open our work session on our final bill for the day, Senate Bill 1541. And this is the Cleaner Air Oregon bill. Why don't we open make the motion for the amendment. Yeah, let's do the dash twos.
Is that the one we're doing?
Dash twos.
Dash twos.
That's what we want.
Chair Dembrough, I move to adopt the dash two amendments dated 2/14/18.
Vice Chair Olson has moved to adopt the dash two amendments dated February 14th, 2018. Let me give some background to this. I think when we heard the bill on Monday, I indicated that there were negotiations happening involving industry and Senate members with advice from agencies around ways that Senate Bill 1541 could be modified in order to move us forward in the implementation of the Cleaner Air Oregon program in a way that would provide industry with the certainty and clarity that it needed, as well as making us all comfortable that we were moving Oregon forward in a very deliberate and responsible way to protecting the health of its residents. And, you know, I think at the time I mentioned that we were down to a couple of crunch items, and we were working hard to get there. I believe that we are, we're at a point where we have amendments that I'm going to recommend that we adopt and send this bill down to Ways and Means for further work. Let me say just in kind of preparation, I'm going to ask Agency Director Whitman to come up as well, just to help explain the process that we went through and where we landed in terms of the nature of this, you know, of this program. And I want to start off actually by saying that, you know, we heard on Monday in the informational hearing the recounting of the work group, the advisory committee for Cleaner Air Oregon, the rulemaking advisory committee that spent 18 months or so working on these issues, exploring them, et cetera. I want to say, first of all, that these amendments that we have before us really reflect that process. I mean, the work that they did in researching and understanding and framing the different positions and the different needs, all of that informs this where we are today. What we have before us, I believe, is a way for us to get this program moving quickly. It will involve a program that will be funded via fees imposed on industry that will allow DEQ to have the staffing needed to be able to implement this in a good way. You know, one of the things we heard from industry is they don't want a program that is under-resourced, and we're, you know, they're not going to get answers to their questions when questions come up, that they are able to really understand what's expected of them, and that they can work with the agency in order to effectively implement the program. And it does no one any good to have a program that is not well appropriately resourced. This bill will get us there, and that is a really, I think, strong element of it. Largely, Director Whitman can elaborate on this. You know, what the bill does is it looks at air pollution in a different way. Instead of looking at thresholds for different pollutants, it looks at this in terms of the health impacts on people who live around facilities or who live in an airshed. And that's a different way of doing things for Oregon, but there seemed to be a clear need for us to be doing it that way. We have, you know, there are other states that have been doing it this way for new facilities. And some states and some jurisdictions have been doing it for existing jurisdictions as well. What we seek to do in this bill is both. And so we have a set of expectations for new construction and others for existing, mainly looking at cancer risks as well as non-cancer risks, and they're treated somewhat differently, and that's, I think, how the that's how these things are done. What we have before you is a set of thresholds where we are looking at a statewide non-cancer standard of 5, and that amount, though, that number could go down. Depending on what science is telling us, can go down for individual facilities. Depending on what science is telling us and what the particular hazards are, right? So a runny nose, which can be very irritating, and but is not of the same order as a potential developmental disease, right? They need to be treated differently. And it was important, I think, for our agencies to have the flexibility to be able to treat them differently. And we have gotten there in these amendments. And I want to applaud industry for moving in that direction. Because to a certain extent, that compromises the goal of certainty, right? But you have the alternative goal of we need to follow the science, and we need to be able to distinguish between hazard levels. So this does that. And I think that the, this bill, once it's finalized, I think it will put Oregon in the forefront of states who are trying to improve the air quality for their citizens. The other thing that it does is it creates a pilot project, which is going to set the state on a path that is really, it's different for all the states and jurisdictions, in that it's going to look at the problem I forget now how it's actually worded, but we're probably looking at a dense urban area, and I'll leave it to you to figure out where that might be. And we're looking at sort of the cumulative impacts of all of the smokestacks in that area, plus there are other issues around diesel pollution and wood stoves, wood smoke, everything that adds to a compromised air quality will be looked at. And that is a really interesting feature of this bill. So with that, let me see what the director might want to add to give his impression of the process. Before he does, I want to recognize that Senator Girod is here. Senator Girod, very instrumental in bringing this forward, and I'm sure he feels pretty much like a pretzel, as I do, over this process. So, Richard.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, the director of Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you about the process that has gone into the work on Senate Bill 1541, which was introduced by Senator Girod, and which Senator Girod and some other legislators convened a work group around. I know there's some discomfort with having a process of a legislative work group to work on a policy issue like this. It is true, and you heard earlier this week, that thousands of hours have been spent by the Rules Advisory Committee working on these issues. But it's important to understand a couple of things. Number one, the legislative direction that would be provided by this bill leaves intact the basic framework that the Rules Advisory Committee recommended and that went into the draft rules the department has proposed to the Environmental Quality Commission. So importantly, it's a health-based program. It's looking at the highest risk facilities first. And it continues to have this element which is really leading the nation in terms of looking at cumulative air toxic risk in urban areas and protecting on the basis of cumulative impacts on residents within that particular area. So we are going to learn a lot from that effort, and if it works well, we'll be back to talk with the legislature about whether that makes sense in other areas of the state. I want to mention just a couple of other things about program elements. There is all this focus on the health risk numbers, but I think you all know there's a lot of fear out there about air toxics. There's fear out there on the part of businesses. There's fear out there on the part of community residents. And that's because we don't know a lot about air toxics. A very important part of this program is a regular inventory of what facilities are emitting in terms of air toxics so that the department, the state, will be able to talk to businesses and residents about what is actually happening out there. And that's not to be minimized. Right now, we're operating in kind of a vacuum in terms of information. And as you all know, operating in a vacuum, everybody immediately goes to the worst conclusion. So that program element in terms of an inventory and regular reporting is very important. For the highest risk facilities, we will be working with those facilities to reduce their risk over time. In some cases, that will mean additional emissions controls. In other cases, it may be as simple as raising the height of a stack on a facility. In other cases, it may be substituting a particular element that goes into the production to be less toxic. So this program will put us on a par with 30 other states in the nation, many of whom adopted similar programs back in the late 1980s or early 1990s. We are behind the curve on this issue in Oregon, and for me, it's important that we fill this gap and be able to assure our residents who live near an industrial facility about what the actual risk is. There's been a lot of focus on health risk numbers, and the last thing I want to emphasize, two things. One, the risk numbers that are in Senate Bill 1541 for new facilities are the same risk numbers that have been used in the state of Washington for years. And we've looked carefully at that program and at the economic impacts of that program on businesses, and it has operated successfully for quite a long period of time. The other numbers for existing businesses, the cancer risk number is higher than the number that was proposed by the department, but you know, it at a level that is within the range that was being considered by the Rules Advisory Committee. A lot of the focus has been on non-cancer risk and this number of 5. And there, an important thing to note is that the bill contains a sunset clause on that particular element so that 10 years from now, we collectively, including the legislature, will have the opportunity to revisit that particular program element and see if it's working or not and make adjustments. Right now, we're operating in a vacuum. It's not a great time to be setting things like that in stone. So one of the reasons that I know, just speaking for the department, that believe is important in these proposed amendments is the inclusion of that sunset. And with that, I'll close. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you for that, Richard. And thanks for mentioning the sunset. I can't believe I forgot to mention that, because that was really the biggest lift, I think, for industry, you know, including this sunset. And I think it really is important. You know, over the years, we're going to come to understand these numbers better and better. The science will become, we hope, clearer and clearer. And so to be able to revisit this in 10 years, I think it's going to be really very, very important. And but, you know, we're also, you know, concerned about industry, you know, having the time to adjust and adapt to these new standards. We did hear, you know, a lot of testimony that industry wants to help solve this problem. And I take them at their word. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
Yeah. Senator Girard, you want to come up and say anything?
Sorry,
Senator Robles.
Yeah, I just want to say that I appreciate in conversations that we kind of initiated, and we asked you to come. You came willingly and Senator Dembrough, I want to thank you for the same thing, because you can't get anywhere without having a conversation. And at the bottom of all of this is an understanding that most of us have, that you were representing a lot of the stuff that happened to the commission, other kinds of things. I know Senator Dembrough talked to a lot of different people outside, so it wasn't intended that in any way that we were trying to do something secretively. We were trying to do something that we could come to an agreement, because for me, one of the biggest issues happened the last session is the fact that we need to fund your agency. You don't have the experts we need to have. Industry needs to have the ability to monitor directly as opposed to just modeling, because we all know there's kinds of things. And we had to have a conversation about that, because all of us would like to know exactly what's there, and that's doing things like actual monitoring as opposed to just doing a model. So all of those things were discussed, and I know a lot more about this than I would have ever wanted to know. But I thank you for bringing other perspectives in, because it was not an easy process, and every time we get one place, other people's perspectives got brought into the conversation. And I just wanted to thank you for the efforts of the DEQ, and we do need to get more people with expertise in your department.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough, Senator Roblin. I appreciate those remarks. And in this process of this work group, we collectively have worked hard to keep other members of the legislature informed about the work that we've been doing. We've also worked hard to make sure the business community is informed, and that community advocates who have an interest in this issue also are informed about what we've been working on. So I appreciate those remarks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Senator Durant.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough. I'll be very brief.
Could you introduce yourself for the record?
I am Senator Fred Gerard, represent Senate District 9. I just want to thank the members, and that was Senator Dembrough and Senator Roblin, Richard Whitman, Anna Braun. We have spent a long, long time with this bill. And for you that don't know, the definitions and the little parts of the bill that you look at and you think didn't amount to much, the difference in interpretations and how that had to be formed and the length of time it took to come up with this bill, it was really a monumental piece of work. And I'm hoping that we can come to agreement on the final numbers and move forward with the bill. It's industry really wants to have a sideboard so that they know exactly what they're up against. The environmental community wants to make sure that they're health is secure, and I think as legislators we have an obligation to try to hit the sweet spot, and I think that we came very, very close, and it's going to be up to you as to where that bar gets set. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator Durant. Yeah. Colleagues, any discussion, further discussion on the amendments? Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough. We have not had the motion for the amendment yet.
We have had.
So we're still in the discussion for the dash two?
Right.
Okay, I just wanted to confirm where we were at. Mm-hmm, okay. So thank you once again for this. In my short time here in the Senate and when I was in the House, I'd like to think that I spent a fair amount of time trying to understand people's districts, and I want to bring to everyone's attention that although all of us care about air quality, of course, that a lot of the reason why this came to be came out of events that occurred in my district. Yeah. Now that does not happen very often, but that's how it happened this time. And so I've really enjoyed learning about your district, about Senator Gerard and I sit together on the subcommittee for natural resources, and about Senator Bence's, and et cetera, and all of our other colleagues. I really feel I've made an effort to get to know about other people's districts and the important things that happen there. This whole topic came about from the moth study that we all know about, and that was in my district. A lot of the results impacted that area. And Mary Pivido, who's sitting in the back here, before that ever even happened, had really focused in Northwest Portland some issues that were occurring around air quality. And although we all have our different areas of the state we represent, but for those of us that are in more densely populated areas where different zoning decisions occurred at different times throughout history, of course, and things were grandfathered in, we have a mix of businesses that the setup is such now that perhaps we wouldn't have allowed that to occur at another time of history. And so I want just people to be mindful as this, I understand what we're doing here today and moving this forward, and I'm very glad that we're going to be funding DEQ, and I am very much in support of that because they need to have funding to do the work that's so important for all Oregonians. But I just want folks to be mindful of the fact that the decisions that are on the table here, and even though I've not been part of the negotiations the way that Senator Dembrough and some of the others have been part of them, this is this very difficult balance that I don't think the intention, of course, is to, of course, not to harm industry. My constituents work at a lot of these very facilities that we're talking about. And so they are getting their paycheck. And some of these glass facilities, they're a few blocks from where my son goes to high school. Like, these are literally all happening in a lot of ways. They happen in other people's districts, too. I agree. But the I obviously represent one of the most progressive areas in the state. And we all have our town halls and et cetera. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know, it'll be a competition between me and Senator Dembrough or not, but I know that Senator Dembrough and I both were so many times at the same town halls where air quality was discussed. And of course, then we were at ones where each other weren't there. I have never, and I've lived in my area for over 20 years, I have never seen my people come out the way they came out when it came to this issue. There has never been anything like it. So that is causing folks to really be counting on us to take care of them. So I just want to put on the record that we need to make some decisions and make certain that we are protecting the health of our constituents, all of our constituents. So thank you.
Thank you very much for those comments, Senator Taylor. And, you know, I will say that there were, over the course of this, you know, this process, there were some people who were calling for different standards for the urban parts of the state and the rural parts of the state. And, you know, at the end of the day, what we heard from those who advocate for the public health is that this is not just an urban issue. I mean, I just wanted to put on the record that I think that is one of the strengths of this, is that we are trying to improve air quality for everyone all over the state. And, you know, we care about everyone all over the state. And that, I think, is a strength, that we found a framework to be able to do that with this bill. So any further discussion of the amendments? Is there any objection to our adopting these amendments? Seeing none, so ordered, the dash twos are adopted.
Chair Dembrough, I move Senate Bill 1541 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson has moved Senate Bill 1541 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Yes, Senator Brzozinski.
I'll be supporting the bill moving forward. It is one of those things I wanted to kind of wait until the dash twos were in. It does reflect for us, as Senator Taylor says, the responsibility we have in our positions to ensure that we are having good air quality. To hear Director Whitman talk about how far we lag behind other states, I ironically remember in my days in Houston representing a company that was basically placing a landfill in an area that was determined to be probably one of the first environmental justice lawsuits back in '78 of all times. And for me, it was very unique, but we have seen in that period of time going forward how many local communities, how many individual neighborhoods are adversely impacted to a degree that when we try to regulate, you know, say, across the board without taking in consideration those local immediate impacts, that we're probably not doing our job, because you can't necessarily have one standard fits all. And so I'm hoping that this will in fact allow us to have much more sensitivity and understanding, so it doesn't matter what neighborhood per se you live in as to the quality of air that you have for your kids.
Great, thank you. Any further discussion? Is there any objection to adoption of this motion? Seeing none, so ordered. So it will go to Ways and Means. I expect some robust discussion of it down there. You know, hopefully it will emerge. So with that, it will emerge in some form. So with that, I will close our work session on Senate Bill 1541. Colleagues, we are adjourned.